Welcome to the Shelf Shedding Movie Show. I'm your host, Jason Dubray, and I'm really excited to have Tim Hildebrandt back on the show. You were on one of the early, like in the first 50 episodes, or maybe less
right.
than that. We talked about sci-fi movies.
I remember.
And I mean, we had Planet Nine from Outer Space, which is considered the worst movie ever made, mixed in with War of the Worlds. And yeah, it was a really, really good conversation there. And all this time has passed. We have not been talking to each other for a while. I've been trying to kind of follow things in your life at the living in the excited states of America there. And I got a scam email from you, which
yes, you and a million other people.
It did not feel like a Tim message. So I sent you a separate message saying, was this something that you intended to send out? And you're like, no, I've been hacked. And then we were just back and forth. Said, well, why don't we, you know, when there's time, just put together a little podcast here.
You know what's funny, Jason? The unexpected, like the silver lining. So obviously that's frustrating when you realize you've been hacked and you have like 18 people messaging you going, did you send this? But like if I wrote down a list of the 20 people that wrote me, it's probably like 85% of those people are people that I haven't talked to for a long time that I really enjoy talking to. It's like the perfect list. So it's like, well, this kind of feels like, I mean, like my friend Dave Snyder contacted me, my friend Herb Hall, you, these are guys I haven't talked to for a couple of years, but people who are, I love them.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like, so I'm having these email conversations now with all these guys and we're catching up and it's like, well, it actually turned out to be not such a bad thing. You know?
Yeah. I mean, there's good that can come from everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Being hacked and all those, it's so annoying. And
frustrating.
The emails are very clever in the way that it's presented.
That one was so good. Yeah. That one was really good. I know we've already talked about the hows and whys, but it came from a producer friend who I just made a movie with last summer. And there's supposed to be a screening coming up. We've been told that there's going to be a screening coming up. Mm-hmm. And then I get this email ostensibly from her with an invitation package. And I was like, oh, it's for the screening because we all knew this email was coming. So I click on it, open it up, and
nope, it's not.
Like an atomic bomb. All of my friends are now infected with this ridiculous. So yeah, I apologize about that. And anybody else who's a friend of mine who got that email, I apologize.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, for me, it's good because we're having a chance to connect here.
Me too.
So, and we talked about, and this is not exactly the same version of what we talked about. You know, shortly after that first podcast, we thought about, okay, at some point, and I always knew, like, I think you were still living in LA back then, how busy you are. And I said, well, I'll just, like, let's plan something for whenever it works. And you thought the idea of doing something with Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. And so originally it was going to be like a traditional show, six reviews or like three of each or something like that. I think just this idea of getting this together so we'd have a chance to talk. We just decided to do a bit of a rank show in a way. So we're each separately going to reveal our five favorite movies by Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, not together, but just separately. I'm going to do a little bit of, because I just can't help myself, do a bit of a point system with this. Like we would at the end. So your fifth ranked movie will get 1 point, fourth will get like your fourth will get two points, etc., up to 5 points for your favorite. Same thing for mine. I'll combine them together. We'll kind of have our combined top five list for each of them. And then at the end, because I have to have something that we shed, we're not actually going to get rid of DVDs or anything in this episode. But the idea would be that if we were to shed a movie from each of their careers, what would we choose? And it'll be interesting to see what we choose. I think.
And are we choosing those separately, or do you and I have to agree on a movie?
We have to agree. No, we just separately will voice our thoughts on one that, you know, we can think. And, So. Affleck and Damon. I mean, of course, like the Good Will Hunting story of it, writing together buddies from Boston. Just these young guys who are, and you would see them in a lot of movies kind of before Hunting, and even back to like uncredited cameos. They were both in Fenway when Field of Dreams was being shot, that sequence with Kevin and Gerald Jones. So that's listed in their IMDBs because they were apparently can be
really?
seen. in the background there. I've never seen it, but I'd have to look.
That's hilarious. I didn't
We
know
were
that.
at it for a while. I mean, that was about 8 years before Good Will Hunting came out, and it, like, yeah, family. What was the Brendan Fraser movie? School Ties. Sorry, School Ties. Of course, Ben Affleck in Dazed and Confused, and then Kevin Smith, kind of before all this happened. He was the producer on Good Will. Really was Good Will Hunting that kind of cemented their fame. Their careers, and they're working together a lot, including, I mean, there's a Netflix movie I haven't seen yet, an action movie that they did together at the beginning of the year. But
Rip.
Rip, yeah, I've heard good things about it. I'll have to give it a go. It's interesting though, in some ways, how the careers have been in a bit of a different trajectory. I'd say Matt Damon's career has been a little bit more steady. Like, there's a lot to choose from, a lot of great films. Affleck has had some major lows, and for a while there, he was kind of getting like, okay, yeah, Matt Damon was writing the screenplay, and Affleck was getting stoned in the room or something like that, and that he didn't deserve to get the screenplay writing with Damon, which I don't think was fair, because we started to see when he moved into directing how great Affleck can be. And so then suddenly he had these great highs, and his highs have almost been bigger than Matt Damon's highs.
I was going to say the same thing. Like, Ben Affleck actually has 70 movies, or 67, 67. I just checked before we came on here because I was looking over a list of his, and there's 67 movies he's done. And I was shocked that my top six Ben Affleck movies, I would say I enjoy more than my top six Matt Damon movies, which I did not expect that. I didn't expect that. I like them both. Like, I would happily spend a week watching both of these lists, but I was kind of surprised at the quality of the work because of the drubbing that he took in the late 2000s, early 2010s, and when it was really getting popular to kind of crap all over Ben Affleck. But he has, I think, proven himself.
He has, for sure. And I mean, the fact is, like, after all, despite all the critical and box office acclaim for Matt Damon, Ben Affleck has more Oscars
Oh, interesting.
because
I
of
didn't think
Argo.
about that.
He won, Best Picture, and that was an interesting award season, that one where he
Well, and
got.
Argo is when all of that shit talk, pardon my French, all of that negative talk kind of stopped when Argo came out, because it was, because
Don't
that
you?
came out like 2012 or 13, right? Something around there.
Around there,
And it was, I remember, like in the early of the 2010s and early 2010s, late 2000s, that's when it was really getting popular, because Gigli and all that other stuff, it was really getting popular to knock him down. And then Argo came out, and all of a sudden everybody was like, oh, but we can't really do that anymore. Like, you've got to take a guy seriously who makes a movie that good, you know?
And I think it was leading up to that too, and maybe some mention of some stuff he did before that on my list there. So it is kind of interesting. I think, Damon plays the game a little bit better maybe than Affleck. Affleck, I don't. He does smile and he does laugh, but I don't think he's a guy who can. He's not like Tom Cruise and can go out there and he's smiling and looking like he's having the time of his life when he's at a public appearance. If he's not feeling it, then you're going to get kind of the, and then people are like, why is he always so grumpy or something like that? They're just interpreting that he's grumpy, but that's just his look. He's probably somewhat still, as long as he's been a celebrity, but he's uncomfortable
Oh,
socially
yeah.
with this, and he's taking a lot of heat and his marriages and all that stuff. So I understand why he's uncomfortable in that way.
Yeah,
But
me too.
I think he's very, very serious. A friend of mine, who actually recently passed away, saw a celebrity poker tournament years ago, and said Affleck was the best poker player, and he had the best poker face. So it's like, what works well for him in poker doesn't work
Isn't
well
that
for him
interesting?
in his public image there. But it seems like everybody, if he is a bomb, even after his history of recent success over the last 15, 16 years, they'll still jump on this idea that he's just not that great, and then that Damon's.
You know,
big year for Matt Damon because he's, of course, in the Odyssey, Christopher Nolan's big epic
Oh, I'm
film.
so looking forward to that.
Originally, Matt Damon's one of these guys when he gets cast in certain things. Sometimes I do a little bit of a Matt Damon.
Yeah.
I know he's a relationship with Nolan has been in some of his a couple of his movies and smaller roles. And I remember the one that a few years ago, which he got him an Oscar nomination, The Martian.
Yeah.
I was used to the book, and I think I had a different image of that character and that guy. And when Damon was cast, I thought, oh, that would be a different energy than what I thought from reading the book. But it turned out great for him and for the film. So, yeah.
Right. You know, one thing, I'm just adding a movie because it just occurred to me. One of the things people don't think about when you talk about these two guys' careers is Good Will Hunting gave Matt Damon a much better launching point than Ben Affleck, in that Matt Damon was cast as the cerebral, smartest guy in the room. Like a lot of A-list celebrities get their starts in doctor shows or shows where they are portrayed, like Denzel Washington, George Clooney. They get their starts in those shows because that's how you can frame yourself as the kind of person everyone wants to be. And Matt, the Good Will Hunting was that for Matt Damon. He got conceptualized as that above average person that we all kind of wish we were. Ben Affleck chose the lesser role in that movie, or was given the lesser role, and was the dumb schmuck, you know? And so for the next 3 years, so many of the movies that Matt Damon did were just typecast as the cerebral genius. Like he did Rounders, where he's a genius. He did Beggar Vance, where he was like one of the best golf pros in the world. Even in Finding Forrester, they put him in as a cameo at the end to kind of reinforce this idea of prodigy, because he was so established as that prodigy archetype. And so he did a lot of movies right off the bat that framed him in that stellar, exactly how you want to be framed, leading man sort of situation. Ben Affleck, because he took the role he took when he did a movie like Changing Lanes, which reframed him completely as an intellectual business elite guy, people just weren't ready for it. They were like, no, he's the dumb schmuck. We don't want, this isn't who he is. And so that movie just evaporated. Nobody saw it because they weren't ready to see him. He had to make a much bigger jump in order to get to that same conceptualization. So I think the way their career, you were absolutely right when you say Matt Damon plays the game a little better, because that movie gave Matt Damon the ideal launching pad for the kind of career everybody wants. And it gave gave Ben Affleck a big mountain to climb to get out of the character he was now stereotyped as, because he played it really, really well. Like he played that character extremely well. And so that now people were like expecting to see him do more of that, you know?
And actors can get themselves into a box early on very easily, and some will accept it and they'll be happy being character actors and for the rest of their careers. And others who want to do more, and I always got the sense he wanted to do more, and the expectations were being that young and having that kind of success were high from the beginning, probably personally as well. And so I sense it must have been frustrating, and I can understand why he would, like somebody like Kevin Costner, have a little bit of a arm's length distance between himself and the media and the Hollywood personnel, which sometimes gets him into trouble
Well,
for trying to
because
channel
he was
his problem.
abused. He was savagely abused. I mean, how could you not have a distrustful relationship with a media landscape that treats you so horribly? You know, like, I mean, I would be grumpy too around media people if I'd spent 10 years getting crapped on every day. So
I find myself grump.
I'm glad he's out of that. I'm glad that he's finally getting the respect he deserves and is making the movies he wants to make.
For sure. And I am excited to kind of see where these guys go now that they're kind of moving into probably when I first started becoming a movie nerd, the phase that like a career that Jack Nicholson was at, where he was like this kind of superstar but well respected critically. So I'm interested to see what the next I feel like half of their careers are going to lead to, but yeah. Well, we might as well get into a list here because
Let's go.
we're doing it's almost like four lists. So maybe we'll just go alphabetically. We'll start with Ben Affleck and then go to Matt Damon. And maybe what we'll do is the number five for each, and you can go first, then I'll go number five for mine, and I'll keep the points total as we go along here. So with
Sure.
Ben Affleck, what's your number five? Did you do number five?
Number five for me is The Accountant.
Oh, cool.
I really enjoyed The Accountant. It was a very unconventional action movie. It was Ben Affleck playing a character we've never seen him play. It's not a character that's easy to play convincingly, in my opinion. And I thought he was fantastic. I thought he was really good in it, and I thought the movie was very, very interesting.
Yeah,
But,
I've watched it once, and I like the premise of it. I haven't watched the sequel. I know that was
yeah,
last
me
year.
neither. I haven't seen
Yeah,
it either.
I mean I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear anything good. I didn't hear anything bad. So I mean I don't know. We're in this weird world where these movies kind of come and go.
Yeah.
I would be interested to see it. Yeah, and I think there was an interesting their parallel careers at one point. They were both working on being action stars. That was another one where I initially their both of their forays, I kind of preferred the Ben Affleck film, but it didn't catch on as much in the Matt Damon. He cut an entire franchise out of his moving to action there. But Ben Affleck no doubt can do that. He's now kind of playing like the older guy or the captain of a group of guys. I just it was just a complete coincidence. I'm doing this action movie challenge thing, and I came across this movie on Netflix that I hadn't seen. It was from 2019, and it's set in South America about these group of army men, and Affleck was the captain, and they go down and they actually decide to like take care of this South American drug lord dictator.
Oh yeah, that was a Netflix movie. I saw
Yeah,
that.
Three Frontiers, it's called. Really
Yeah.
good cast in it too. And Mark
Is Oscar Isaac in that?
Oscar Isaac's the star of it. It's yeah, those are the
Yeah.
two big names. But yeah, and Mark Boal, who was the writer of Zero Dark 30 and The Hurt Locker, Kathryn Bigelow, they was a executive producer on this, but
Okay.
was a co-writer of it and came up with the story for it. And so kind of seeing him as kind of the senior guy now, as opposed to one of the young guys in the earlier films there. But
I remember watching that movie and going, this is like the perfect Netflix movie because it has all the elements to draw big numbers, which is what Netflix is all about, but the script was kind of hollow. I remember thinking that the script didn't, it was a very straight ahead, get in danger, get out of danger. Like, I don't remember it being super, super deep script. I remember being a little disappointed by the story, but going, a zillion people are going to watch this because of
Yeah.
the names and because the premise is very actiony and exciting, and I was one of them. I bought right into it,
Yeah.
but it wouldn't be a movie I would definitely not a movie I would put on these lists
Well,
for me.
it felt like it was a weird mashup of things, but it was like about PTSD and but then it gets into a little bit of like a simple plan or like one of these type of like, okay, is greed gonna get the better of you? But
Three
there's
Kings.
a bit of a point that was being made in there about, not funding veterans and that they're struggling when they come back from serving. But then there's this whole other crazy action thing. So I kind of thought the first half of the movie worked in the second half, which turned into a bit of a survival story in
This on your list? Is this one of your five?
no, that's not on my list. Sorry.
Oh.
We went on a rabbit hole with that one. Getting back to the accountant. Yeah. Very, very good premise. I don't find it as memorable. Like it's not on my list, but I understand. Like I think this was a really good move at that particular time for him to
Yeah.
take this role, and so and I think the accountant for sure had a pretty good box office and good attention, and no, nobody was hating him for it. So.
I find myself often being drawn to movies where the acting really gets me. Like, I almost put Invictus on Matt Damon's list, not because I like the movie a lot, but because his South African accent is perfect. And that is an unbelievably difficult accent to get right.
Great. Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, as a guy who at some points in my career was known for accent work, to get an accent really good, like to the point where a local native speaker thinks you might be one of them, is the most difficult thing. It is the most difficult thing because there are just sounds that you can practice it as much as you want. If your mouth hasn't spent decades making it, it will never sound natural coming out of your mouth. And South African is one of those languages where the way the words curve on the way out of your mouth, it's very difficult. And he nailed it. I knew South Africans growing up. I know what they sound like. And he nailed it. I remember just thinking to myself, how hard did this guy work on this friggin'
Oh,
accent?
he would have. He would have for sure. Yeah.
Oh,
Yeah. That was an Oscar nomination for best supporting actor for that movie. A lot of people
yeah.
talk about Morgan Freeman, rightly so, in that film too. But yeah. So let's.
I didn't put it on the list, but I looking at my list now, I'm like,
It's
there's several
tough.
on here there because of the acting and not necessarily because of the larger picture of the movie. But anyway,
Yeah.
what's your number five?
So well, let's go with the with Matt Damon. You're number five for Matt Damon, and then we'll
Oh,
get
number
to.
five for Matt Damon. So I have a tie.
Okay.
Can I do a tie?
Sure. There are no rules
Okay.
here. Go for
Okay.
it.
Actually, I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. I'll save one as like a bonus. No, gosh darn it. Okay, I'm gonna do them both. And both of these are movies that I chose because he played very much against type. One is just Ocean's 11. I know it's a very broad movie, it's a very obvious choice, but the reason I chose it is because up to that point in his career, well, maybe not necessarily, that's not necessarily fair, but he had, like we were saying before, he made a career of being the smart guy, the above average guy, the especially skilled guy. And he does have skills in Ocean's 11, but he is the group doofus. Like in Ocean's 11, he's kind of the guy that gets picked on. He's kind of the nerdy guy. And I just love that. I love that choice to take talented Mr. Ripley and make him the dumb guy, you know? And then the tie is Stillwater. Because again, he was playing against type. He was playing at a time when MAGA was probably the most unpopular thing it has ever been in the however many years Trump has been on the scene. He played a guy that wasn't MAGA, but that some people thought might be crossing into that territory. And that's one thing in the larger culture, but in the Hollywood culture, that is an unbelievably difficult career move to play somebody who could be sympathetic to that crowd. That is an almost impossibly dangerous choice for a Hollywood actor to make. And he played it, and he played it with such authenticity. Now, it turns out at the end of the movie, spoiler alert, his daughter's gay. He's a nice guy. He's a good guy and all that. But for, again, it was against type. He was rednecky. He was abrasive. He had a short temper. He didn't have any real special skills. He was just such an earthy every guy. And so those two movies made it on my list for that reason. I thought they were bold choices, and he played them really, really well. He could make a career out of playing either of those characters continuously
Oh, for
because he
sure.
played them both very believably. That's
Yeah.
not his brand, you know.
And I'm glad you went with the tie that you mentioned both of them because Ocean's 11 was an enormous hit. Again,
Yeah.
they took a remake of a Frank Sinatra Rat Pack film, and then that turned into a franchise unto
Yeah.
itself, as well as having the all-female version that came up some years later. Stillwater, I saw that in theaters, and I thought, yeah, I thought what this is a big risk for him, but it
Yeah.
was a such a solid movie, but I do feel like it was because of those thoughts around it that movie didn't kind of get beyond the few weeks
Oh, it really got
in theaters.
quashed. It just did not get exposure. It did not get hype. It did not,
No.
yeah, just the Hollywood machine was just like, nope, no, thank you.
But yeah, Matt Damon is fantastic, but it almost had to be somebody like him.
Yeah.
And I knowing his politics is quite different, likely
Yeah.
from his person, but he's playing the character and he's beaten true to the character, which is a really great
Established
for him.
his personal validity as a good person, as a good human being, is so well established that he's one of the few people who could do that role and pull it off and emerge unscathed, I think.
I think if Ben had played the role, then it would have been might have been it.
Different story. Very different story. Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. I don't approve of this whole cancel world that we're in here too. I mean, if it's a great movie, I want it to be recognized regardless of
Agreed.
whatever. But
Agreed.
yeah, it's tricky in that way. Okay, we'll go on to my
Please.
yes, we're gonna start off. I guess this will be easy because for both Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. It's gonna be the same movie I mentioned as number five, which might be viewed as ungenerously low on the list, but it is Good Will Hunting.
Okay.
I feel like it is no doubt it's a very rewatchable film. It is a great film. The people who want to rewrite history a little bit and say, oh yeah, this is the one that absolutely should have won the Academy Award for Best Picture. I mean, it was a bit of a rocky story. I mean, like these guys get the screenplay made and then they kind of get in, an A-list director, very subtle director, Gus Van Sant. But they get Robin Williams, and then Robin, after being kind of long overdue, wins his Oscar just because he's a nicer guy than Burt Reynolds. I still maintain that because I don't
That's funny.
he wouldn't have been my vote for best supporting actor, which again, history is probably against me on that one. But he gave they knew how to give this role and make this role for somebody who would be an A-lister who would be able to get it greenlit. Like all of the whole thing, and called in friends who were established indie filmmakers to be executive producers, Kevin Smith in particular. Very smart moves for these young men.
Yeah, man, they did all the right things.
And it seems like it's a little bit of a more a wiser movie than it is. It has a lot of intelligence in it. There are, like, upon rewatching and you get a little bit of life perspective, you go back, you can see some immaturity in some choices that they made. Like, this is like a great kind of first major produced screenplay, but you could see they would get better and better. And that's where I kind of lean towards them getting better and getting better as actors as well. I think there's a lot of times where they had the general idea and they were improvising their scenes together. Sometimes it looked a little bit like that. I remember reviewing this with our buddy there, Larry Parsons, on his show Rank Review, which we'll make sure we mention whenever possible. One of Larry's points was there's a moment in there. It's a really important moment, and nobody gets through to Will Hunting until his friend says, like, if you stay around here and keep working here, I'm going to kill you. That scene's really good. But there's this one point when he's saying, like, I'll be here for the next 30, 40 years of my life, and I don't care about that or whatever. It doesn't bother me. And Larry said that again, these are young guys writing about a guy like this. No, he would care about being like, this is the job that he has to have, and he can't kind of proceed beyond what he's doing. Like that, a little bit of flaw in the writing of the dialogue of the Ben Affleck character too. That's always kind of stuck with me when I go to rewatch it there. But it was an amazing achievement. I think it is, the reason that we are having this show is because it
100%.
wasn't for that movie. But I had noticed these guys in movies earlier and thought, oh,
Me
they're
too.
really good. So when they were together, I thought, okay, so this is the one that's going to launch them into superstardom. That's a good thing. But I'm not sure that even then it was my favorite of the work that they would do. So I'm giving fifth place for both of them for Good Will Hunting.
I couldn't agree. Couldn't agree more having that on the list. I have it a little higher up, but you're smart to put it as low as you did because otherwise it would be a runaway win in the points, and we don't want to make it that easy.
And I am doing the points separately, so it's just a point for each of them. It could be. I'm interested to see what the where it falls in the rank of things here. But yeah. Okay, so we'll go back to you now. We're now looking at your number four for Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. I put Changing Lanes in there at number four because when I watched that movie, I was very, very surprised. I think it was his first movie after Good Will Hunting where he endeavored to play an exact opposite of type. And I thought he was excellent. I just thought he played it totally convincingly. The movie is so well written that you have ostensibly with Samuel L. Jackson, you have a protagonist and an antagonist, but it's so well written that you can't decide at any point in the movie which is which. Like in one scene, it feels like Ben Affleck's the protagonist and Jackson's the antagonist, but then the next scene you see things from Jackson's point of view and it's the opposite. So the movie was so well written, and I just thought Affleck was perfect in it. I think It, because it came at a point in his career where people were kind of starting to dump on him, he didn't get the credit he deserved. But I don't understand why it wasn't a better star vehicle for him. I don't understand why it didn't accelerate his career to a higher place because he was so good in it. And to me, it was just a really well-made, well-written movie.
Yeah, and I mean, and I might have my timing wrong on this, but I'm usually I think it was put in some weird time, like in the spring. It wasn't even quite the summer season yet, so it was released not at kind of like one of those peak times, like the summer or Oscar season or that kind of thing. But
Could be.
I went probably the first couple of weekends to see it in theaters. I haven't watched it a lot since then. I do have it in my collection, so it'll be reviewed in more detail in a future episode, but. I just remember those two were just so good, and the moral gray areas of what happened and what it recently reminds me of, like Netflix is having success with this. Now it's turned into a series of Beef, which is about like some sort of event naturally happens where people get into conflict, and then it just gets bigger and bigger and more dramatic. I feel like this film is a 2-hour version of that. That kind of concept. And I mean, the fact that they were playing with the concept of there was a white man and a black man in conflict in this film too, but like where it goes, it said a lot about society at that time, but I think it just says even more about society right now, where if you're
Yeah,
having a bad day, then
to me, it's not limited by. I think it's a movie that stands the test of time.
it
It's
does.
just one of those movies that's really, really good, and it's kind of like Crash. You know, it's one of those movies where you can watch it when it first came out, or you can watch it 15 years later, and it's still works.
Yeah, it's it didn't quite. It was a runner up for me for my Ben Affleck list.
Okay.
I kind of thought you would mention it because we had talked about it some years ago about maybe putting it in that show. And it's again, I one of the things with my podcast, I like to highlight movies that are kind of forgotten about, and this is one
Yeah,
I
that's
feel like
good.
unfairly. So I'm glad you were able to give it some time there.
What about
All right,
you?
number okay, so we're looking at number 4 for your Matt Damon list.
Do you want to do your number four for Ben Affleck or no?
No, I'll do my number 4s after. Yep.
Okay. Number four for me is Talented Mr. Ripley. And I'm a lot of my choices are very broad. I'm not, I first of all, I don't watch as many movies as you do. Just straight spoiler alert. And secondly,
You
I think
work
my
in the
taste,
movies.
yeah,
You
I
make
know.
the
My tastes are, I think, a little more simple than yours too. But I just thought he was great in it. I still remember him singing My Bloody Valentine or My Funny Valentine. And just being really moved by that scene, like really moved by it. I just thought everything about that movie, the way it was written, the way it was acted, I loved it. It's one of my favorite, to this day, one of my favorite Matt Damon movies.
Yeah, it was Anthony Minghella right after winning the Oscar for The English Patient, and adapted this
Matt
work. And
Damon was red hot. Matt Damon was red hot. Everybody wanted to work with him. That was back in the sort of the afterglow of Goodwill. Like, I don't think it was more than 3 or 4 years after Goodwill Hunting. He had a string of movies in those years that were the end of the 90s and the early 2000s that were really, really good because the best people in Hollywood wanted to work with him.
well, and it makes sense too. I'll go into my number 4s, but I might as well start with Matt Damon because we have the exact same movie in the exact same place. Talented Mr. Ripley. And there's been a Ripley. At one point, John Malkovich was in a movie playing Ripley. There was the Andrew Scott. I think it was in Netflix Ripley
Know that. Like same
miniseries.
character?
So there've been a lot of adaptations of this, but this is the one that really struck me. There, for those who don't know about it, it's about a man who kind of gets into this world, and he's a con artist, but he's also a bit of a social chameleon, and he basically tries to possess the identity of different characters. And this beyond the fact that in some cases you'll find my list involves, I really love the movie, even if these guys were not as big a part of, or completely the reason, but Matt Damon anchored this so well. But Jude Law got an Oscar nomination for this as being kind of the guy that Ripley was trying to become, but he could become anybody. Gwyneth Paltrow's in here, and there's one moment where Ripley's talking in Gwyneth Paltrow's voice, and it's Matt Damon, and I remember just that blew me away that he could do that so well.
I don't remember
And
that.
the other performance in that movie that just blew me away, because he was in a ton of movies in '99, was Philip Seymour Hoffman came in. He was the guy who kind of saw through Ripley and was kind of suspicious of him from the beginning, and kind of what happens there. It's a really good psychological thriller.
Man, Philip Seymour Hoffman, he was so good. You could do a podcast on him, man.
Oh yeah, and I think I do have I do have that in the works there somewhere, but yeah, this was still like the same year that Philip Seymour Hoffman was in Magnolia, and he was just in he was working all the time, because people, much like Matt Damon, including the fact that like this is a guy you want in your movie. And
Yeah. He
so
makes every movie better. I
yeah.
just saw him last night in Moneyball.
Yeah,
And man,
he was good in that. Yeah,
he's
playing that
so
manager.
good in that. So
Yeah.
good in that.
Yeah.
And
Just
they're very
he
different.
shows up. I mean, he's another guy kind of like Affleck and Damon, that were, as young actors, would show up in a bunch of stuff that we just didn't know who they were until like later on. Like, I mean, Philip Seymour Hoffman, I first recognized him in Scent of a Woman. He was he was like it's kind of this entitled.
I think the first time I saw him was in Awakenings. Wasn't he in Awakenings with Robin Williams?
I'd
Wasn't
have
he
to look
like,
back.
what's
Maybe.
that? I think
I'd
he
have
was
to
like
look back.
the junior doctors or staffers at the hospital that
Well, he's
that.
in Patch Adams, he was in.
Oh, is it Patch Adams? Yeah. That's great.
I got my
You're right.
issues with Patch Adams, but that's a conversation for another day. But
Yeah.
yeah,
But my point is, if we were doing this list about Brad Pitt movies, we would be talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman. If we were doing this list about Robin Williams movies, we would be talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman. If we, like, he's so good, just wherever he shows up, it's just better.
Yes, I
Which we're not
agree.
saying anything anyone doesn't know, but why
Yeah,
not?
sure. But I feel like 99, like you had to have a great movie every week, or else a good movie would be forgotten about. The Talented Miss Ripley was a great movie that got a lot of attention around that time, but has been kind of hasn't had the legacy of other 99 movies, and people should I mention it anytime I excuse you. I haven't done a full review of it on the show yet, but someday I will. But yeah, I think it's one of Matt Damon's best performances, and
Yeah, he's so
it is
good.
number four just because there's some really amazing movies that he has been part of that I'll talk about very soon. For Ben Affleck, this is maybe not Ben Affleck's movie. This is a movie that gets a little bit of a retroactive hate on, just because of who the film had beat for Best Picture. But I'm going to mention Shakespeare in Love, because I think Shakespeare in Love
Oh,
is,
wow. I don't think of that as a Ben Affleck movie, but
no.
yeah, right.
Yeah, he's part of that great ensemble, and he comes in, and he's kind of this he's that person in the repertory company, or think of the community theater context, who's been working with them forever and is kind of the star. And he just kind of walks in, okay, what is the great role for me now? And he's like really kind of cocky and arrogant. And I thought it was a cool move to put him in. He was playing, a character who was British, of course, and working with Shakespeare. Wasn't the most obvious choice. Like, maybe Gwyneth Paltrow wasn't the most obvious choice at that time. I thought he was very good. Of course, a lot more about,
Great choice. Yeah, I never would have thought about that one, but you're right.
the Joseph Fiennes as Shakespeare, and the Gwyneth Paltrow as this woman that he's in love with, and like other colorful Jeffrey Rush's role as a producing the play, and of course Judi Dench coming in as Queen Elizabeth and just stealing the film from everybody else. Those are the things that get remembered. But Affleck was in there. I mean, he was in like with the A-listers to be part of that film. Interesting that his film beat Matt Damon's film that year, if they were in some
Was Matt Damon's film that year?
Saving Private Ryan. So that's why there's so much.
Oh my
That's why
gosh.
people are mad at it, because they think
Oh, I forgot about
this is
that.
one of
They were the same year.
Harvey Weinstein's Power Over the Academy movies or whatever. I mean,
Wow.
yeah, I it's just I remember there was a Shakespeare in Love came out a little bit later, months, and it was right in the heart of the Oscar season. People were discovering it at that time, and it was like, wow, this is way better than I expected it to be. And anyway, so it's a weird one in there. I mean, it's maybe not what
Oh,
people
good.
think of as the most, but I think it's one of the best choices he's made to be part of that great ensemble for that film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Agreed.
So
Good
we're
choice.
on. I think we're now on to your number three for Ben Affleck.
All right. I'm looking something up. I'm just looking something up for a point that I'm going to make a little later on. Okay. Let's see. For Ben Affleck, number three, The Way Back.
Okay.
I absolutely love that movie. I think that might be like, if there's been a critique of Ben Affleck over the years, it's that he has a little bit of a wall up as an actor and is really good at playing externalized characters, you know, the angry character or the macho character or the desperate character, but he doesn't have that fifth gear to play the truly open-hearted character. And I thought The Way Back was a huge, well, first of all, I love the movie. I mean, I bawled when I watched that movie. Also, I was a big fan of Hoosiers when it first came out, like back in the 80s or whatever it was. And I do have a thing for sports movies, but they have to be well made. And a lot of sports movies are not well made. And every once in a blue moon, you get a sports movie that really has a beautiful heart to it. Hoosiers was one. And The Way Back is another. I loved it. I loved everything about it. His acting, that scene that he has with his ex-wife, where they're just at the sitting at the little, I think, outdoor table, and he just starts bawling, and my heart broke for him because you kind of know what he was going through in his real life when he was making that movie, and you know, like he didn't hold anything back. A recovering alcoholic playing a movie about a recovering alcoholic. He's a recent divorcee who's playing a movie about a guy who's losing his marriage. Like he's just those are dangerous places to go as an actor. And he just went for it and played it really, really well and made a movie that I could happily watch again and again. So for me, The Way Back is number three. And should I go straight to Matt Damon, number three?
Well, I'll just mention
Oh,
that I still have not seen The Way Back. So I remember he got very good reviews for it, but
you
it's
haven't
not.
seen The Way Back yet? Oh, you gotta see it. It's so good. It's his best performance. It's probably his very best acting performance ever.
I have heard that, and it's interesting. Like when he gets these great notices, the film seem to disappear. I mean, it's again,
Crazy.
it's not talked about a lot either, and so, but. I'm to blame because I haven't watched it either. So,
Yeah, it's good. It's just a really good, really heartfelt, beautifully told, engrossing story. Simple, low budget, you know, just really, really, really good.
awesome. That's great. I remember you mentioning that one too, and it was one I didn't have a copy of, and I was thinking, oh well, I'll try to figure it out, but I never did figure it out. So, I'm glad that you're mentioning that one as well. Your number three for Matt Damon.
Number three for Matt Damon is Saving Private Ryan. And this is not a movie where I'm choosing it because of his performance. I didn't think his performance was actually that great, to be honest. Because it's probably like a top 20 movie for me all time of any genre of any, I, and he's in it and he's the title character. I got to put it on the list. I mean, don't really have to say too much about it, I don't think. Everybody who's watching this has probably seen it or knows about it. The best
Yeah,
war,
he's
possibly the best war
basically,
movie set made.
yeah. I mean, it's a very famous movie. I guess maybe people of a certain generation haven't, if they haven't
Yeah,
watched
maybe.
anything from the late 20th century, then that might be a problem in that. But yeah, this was the movie that lost to Shakespeare in Love, which I just mentioned.
Yeah.
But it's this whole notion of like this guy's brothers have all been killed in the war, and they had this clause that okay, if one of the down to one of the sons in a family, and the family farm needs to be run, like there are all these other economic besides moral implications, that they would do everything in their power to get that person saved and back home. And then this is about this mission where like these again this platoon has been through a lot already on D-Day, as we've seen the horrifying opening, which is the big thing that people remember about Saving Private Ryan,
Yeah.
rightly so, where
It changed movie
yeah,
making. That
it's like
movie
the
makes
first
some changes.
person pre-video game putting us like right actually on the beaches and the horrors of that battle. And then they've been through a lot. Then they have to go and find this guy and rescue him at great expense to the platoon. And there's a lot of things. In fact, the fact that Matt Damon was still pretty young and he didn't seem to live up as much as like Jeremy Davies, who gave a really good performance in that
Great
movie. And of
performance.
course, Hank was going to play in a bit
Incredible ensemble cast. Really
of
good.
a rougher guy. Like there were so many people, like Vin Diesel in a movie that wasn't a Fast and the Furious or an action
Barry
movie.
Pepper. Barry Pepper, one of his standout
Green
roles.
guy, yeah, that's good. But maybe the fact that he wasn't as confident in his acting
Yeah.
helped with the dynamic. And then also what they did was they all had to go off to that boot camp and training camp and get into shape like military people,
Yeah.
except Matt Damon didn't have to. He got to be flown in for his part. So there was this built-in resentment that the actors had towards him, which worked really well for the dynamic. Spielberg, again, he won Best Director for it, rightly so. He knew what he was doing with that dynamic there. So anyway, we're having a really kind of interesting time of it here because we're moving into my number three. And once again, when it comes to Matt Damon, we have the exact same one. Saving
Oh,
Private Ryan was my number three.
wow. Interesting.
So we're having a, our Ben Affleck thing is looking a little bit different, but our Matt Damon one seems to be kind of going
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
for all the reasons that we gave there. I just think it's a if you have that on your resume, that's one of the greatest projects you've ever been part of,
Yeah.
and it was very much, you know, I'm sure that like Good Will Hunting came out about 6 months before this, so it wasn't like because of the success of Good Will Hunting that he got that
He
role.
was already cast.
He was
Yep.
already cast, it was already shot.
He almost lost it because of Good Will Hunting.
Yeah, really?
He almost lost those. And when we get to the next round of movies, I have a story to tell.
Okay, that'll
But
be interesting because but I also know about Spielberg is that he's looking all over for like who are the next up and coming, you know, his movies
yeah.
come on, you're like, how did he know that? Like he picked up on Julianne Moore's success, like in The Lost World, which is not her best effort or his best effort, but the fact that he got Julianne Moore when she was just becoming big, and Vince Vaughn like shortly after Swingers, and you know, he and his
He's a
people,
great eye. He has a
you
great eye
know,
for talent.
who's gonna work, and it's not, you know, they get the A-listers and the A-plus list, but then also the up-and-coming people too in the films, and they that
Right,
was.
and he knows how to find established actors that never broke through.
And it was
Like,
good casting.
what's the name of the lead scientist character in Jurassic Park? What's his name? His real life name? Sam or what was it? Something.
Oh, you talking about Sam Neill? Yeah.
Sam Neill,
Yeah.
yeah.
What a
Sam Neill
colossal.
had been working since the 70s,
Yeah.
but nobody knew who he was, and then and but Spielberg recognized truthful acting, and he's like, I'm gonna make this guy a star. I'm gonna make this guy a household name, although maybe not a household name. I couldn't remember him,
Yeah.
but he knows how to. He knows honest acting when he sees it.
All right, then I guess then after that we're going to Ben Affleck, my number three. And this is the movie where I paid attention to Ben Affleck before Good Will Hunting. And it was earlier that year to a movie that I still kind of think controversially, many will disagree, is a better movie than Good Will Hunting. It's called Chasing Amy.
Oh, Chasing Amy. Oh, interesting. Okay.
Kevin Smith's, and it was his third film. He had done Clerks, which was a big indie success, like one of those great Sundance Film Festival stories. I watched it recently, and it held up for me. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes I have a really good time with it. The last time I watched it, I had a good time with it. I've never been a huge Mallrats guy. The sec last time I watched it, I warmed up to it a little bit more.
Nice.
Chasing Amy, which was got a lot of acclaim initially, and then it started to be more Mallrats that got attention than Chasing Amy, and maybe it's just the how we view things and the Joey Lauren Adams character, you know, that some people might have problems with it or kind of see Kevin Smith as just kind of being this adolescent man boy writing it. But Affleck and his buddy, played by Jason Lee, are comic book creators, and they show up at the comic conventions. And then
Such a Kevin Smith premise.
it is it's totally Kevin Smith and like these New Jersey people, and then Ben Affleck runs into the woman of his dreams, Joey Lauren Adams, and then discovers that she's gay, and then the whole thing is they become friends after that, but then there is this romantic kind of love story which he cannot settle in because he starts hearing all kinds of rumors about her because of the gossip in the, you know, section of New Jersey, and how that goes, and like kind of all connected to the world he's created in these different films there. I thought the performances were great. Affleck really centers the film. He does represent that young man in his 20s who, you know, you see this woman, you want this woman, you get the woman, but then you are, you know, too immature to be able to handle the relationship. And then like you totally screw it up. And there's scenes where you wince as an audience member with the choices that he makes. I think, and this one seemed to me have a little bit more humor and a little bit more. This is before he was famous, so he seemed like a little bit less weight on his shoulders as an actor. And he didn't. He was a central character and it was a good role for him, but he didn't have to have the burdens of being the writer, director, producer of it, or like how is this going to go? He just seemed a little bit more free as an actor in this role. And I really like, you know, I really like him in that film, and I really enjoy it. Joey Lauren Adams, I love that performance. I still do, even though there's a bit of shouting and stuff that goes into the emotional scenes, and her voice is very shrill, which you know, turns off some listeners. But all that to say, I really like that film, and I, it's where I first started to take this guy seriously. It wasn't Good Will Hunting, it was Chasing Amy, and that stayed high up in my esteem as crude and immature and whatever as the screenplay, much as I said about the Good Will Hunting screenplay too. These were these guys who are East Coast US guys who are suddenly becoming serious filmmakers, and they are writing what they know from their point of view at that time. And I still think it's they're very worthy films to watch. It can survive for me out of that the whole 1990s remark there. So that's Chasing Amy.
It is quite wonderful when you see an actor who catches your eye. And we're going to talk about this with my next Matt Damon choice. When you see an actor who catches your eye and you go, I don't know who that is, but that is an unbelievably talented person. And then a couple of years later, they explode. That's always a fun experience, and I'm going to talk about that soon. That's really great that you brought up Saving Amy, because that's kind of what that was for you, right? Like, you saw him, you were impressed with it, and then all of a sudden, kaboom! He's huge.
I became a bigger Kevin Smith fan because of that. I did really kind of admire the ambition of Dogma, which was kind of the film after that. It has been diminishing returns for him, and he came to Saskatoon actually, and
Oh, did he?
gave
The
a
expo?
talk, he gave one of
The
his talks,
Comic-Con?
one of his talks. It wasn't a calm thing; it was just him. I went out with Larry to watch him, and you know, it was interesting. It was kind of disappointing. Like it was supposed to be this question and answer thing, but he basically had two questions, which led into stories which weren't really related to the questions people asked. And I saw people in line for a long time waiting for to get there, and completely ran out of time. So it was a little bit more of like he's giving a speech, and he's got like the different points he wants to hit. And that they weren't uninteresting stories. I mean, how his daughter got to roll in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which this is before it had been released.
I didn't know that. I didn't know his daughter
That's,
was in there.
yeah, it was that's the story of him telling that is really good. But I think then just take out the question and answer. It's just an evening of him telling his jokes and his stories about how he got Clerks made and all these, because he is a really good storyteller. But
He tells a great story about making a documentary about Prince. Have you heard that one?
I don't think I've heard that one. No.
That's worth Googling. because that it takes about an hour to tell the story, but it is worth sitting. It's a good hour. It's an hour well spent. Prince just hires him out of nowhere to make a documentary. Doesn't know Prince, doesn't know anything about Prince, and just it, that's like you talk about the Odyssey. It was an odyssey of an experience trying to figure out what Prince wanted and how to make him happy. And it's a wonderful story if you ever get a chance.
Well, cool. Yeah, that
Yeah.
sounds good. So I think we're on to now your number two for Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck. I put Argo. It's a fairly conventional choice. I understand that. I put it for a couple of reasons. It was a huge achievement for him as a producer. I think what I liked about it, honestly, I've always been a Ben Affleck fan. You say Affleck? Is that how we're supposed to say it? Ben Affleck?
You're probably saying it the right way. I, yeah.
He was getting dumped on for so many years, and I always remember thinking, why do people hate him so much? Like, yes, he's made some stinkers, but that's because he's taking risks. That's what we're supposed to do, you know? And yeah, he had so much hate early on, and I was a fan. I liked his movies. I liked his acting. I liked his choices, and I always was a little confused about why people hated him so much. And then Argo came along, and A, I'm Canadian, so there's a Canadian attachment to the story, although this movie didn't really probe it the way we would like, because
Yes.
I think the real, I forget his name, Ken, whatever his name was actually had a bigger part to play than they gave him credit for. And I think they kind of downplayed it. But I remember growing up, I was alive in the 70s and early 80s when that happened. And I remember the hullabaloo about Canada's involvement in that whole thing. And it was actually a source of national pride for a lot of people. So I have a kind of an attachment to that story going into it. And was really happy to see it get made for the screen and loved the movie. But I think honestly, in my heart, I was just so happy that he got to slap his critics in the face with just a wonderful achievement.
Yeah.
I was just really, really happy because that whole phenomenon of crapping all over him just kind of stopped, at least for a while, when
Little
that
bit. Till the next divorce, basically. Till
yeah.
Jennifer
When
Garner divorced, then it was back to okay.
yeah, then when that movie came out, it just I was just happy for him as a human being, to be
Yeah.
honest with you. But I
It's
do love the movie. I think it's well made. I think it's a great story. It's well told. His acting is good, but I was happy to see him succeed on the producing side.
Yeah, and I think it was the first time that there was real love for him
Yeah.
because it was just a weird year where the Golden Globes happened, and they were just like right. I think it was right after the Oscar nominations had come out. It was a different type of calendar, which they've since changed so that that kind of dynamic wouldn't happen again. But
Interesting.
he had just been snubbed. For like it was obvious it was a best picture contender, but he had just been snubbed for best director with the by the Academy. Then the Globes happened and he won best director at the Globes, and people were like, whoa, like okay, like this organization is gonna celebrate this guy. We should all be celebrating this achievement. And that went forward. He won the Directors Guild award without an Oscar nomination. Again, that's kind of an unheard of type of thing. And that was a year ultimately Ang Lee won for Crouching or for Life of Pi. He won another Oscar because it was Spielberg for Lincoln, and it was kind of between those two because Ben Affleck wasn't in the picture for Best Director. But all these people felt so bad for him, and that poured into love for the film to the point where he did win the Oscar as a producer. Funny side note that George Clooney and Grant Heslov was they were also producers of the film too. So, yeah, whether it's completely historically accurate, that's what happens with all these movies, including Saving
Yeah, probably not.
Private Ryan, and Saving Private Ryan, which is a great film, has one of those silhouette shots of Spielberg with a character who had already been killed in a scene later on. So these things happen when we're making movies, right? But it's a suspenseful, entertaining, you know, kind of like a Munich, which is another really good film.
Oh,
Without much.
if this was a Spielberg list, that would be on it for me.
Yeah,
Love Munich. I'm a huge fan of that movie.
it's and that's like a very, very dark number like this where you know, the people who live through it know what happens, but yet you're still, your heart's in your throat when you're watching the intensity of this. And it was just a great achievement here. And well, it may be mentioned a little bit later on. So I'll say that.
A quick little rabbit hole on Munich. Have you ever seen the documentary One Day in September?
I've heard
that might be my favorite documentary of all time, and it's about the same events that are covered in the movie Munich. Michael Douglas has a hand in this that documentary. He's the narrator, and I'm not sure if he was on the producing side of it too, but it is an unbelievably good documentary, one of the all-time great documentaries. And that same Munich Olympics tragedy is the focus of that. So I would put that on your list of things to watch. It's really good.
And there was a really good film that came out just a bit more than a year ago, which was from the point of view of the sports reporters who ended up being on the front lines of what happened in that, you know, that tragic day there, as they're discovering the Olympics, and then the hostage situation happens, and they have no choice, but they are the ones that are covering it. But can the news look down at the sports division? And
what's the movie called? What's it called?
And just give me a second to look for it here. Peter Sarsgaard is really good in it. It's one I actually thought should have gotten more Oscar attention. It got a little bit initially, but then got kind of forgotten about in the mix for the 2024 Academy Awards here. September 5th, it's called.
And
if you're interested in that particular event, check out September 5th. It's a really good movie.
I will put that on the list because
it's
captivating that.
Like one of those docu-dramas. Like it's like, you know, like United 93 or something like that, where we're watching it happen. And I mean, it's all being acted out by act, but it feels very, very authentic. So,
great.
And just background of like doing anything live on television at that time in the 1970s, and seeing like how different that is then to how it is now is kind of a cool thing there too. So, where do you get to your number two for Matt Damon?
Number two. Now I'm going to preface this by saying there is a phenomenon that does not happen to me often, but it happens to me once every several years. I'll see an actor in a small role, and I will be blown away by this actor. And I will be like, who was that? And I will make a point of finding out who they are. And I'll marvel that they're not a bigger deal than they are. And then, sure enough, 3 or 4 years later, or 5 or 7 or 10, that person blows up and becomes a huge deal. One time it happened to me when I was watching Robert Duvall's movie, The Apostle. Mm-hmm. And there was this young, simple-minded man in the movie. He's a young guy. He's very simple, he has kind of a religious conversion, and there's this moment where he's just crying, and he's kind of simple-minded, but he's likable, and I just remember watching this character and just going, I don't know who this actor is, but I 100% buy into this character. And it's not, again, this is not a conventional Hollywood choice. An actor who wants to get in good with Hollywood doesn't play a young man having a Christian conversion and being, you know, and making it look like a positive thing. And so like to do something that dangerous and to do it so well. And I remember just thinking to myself, I need to find out who this is, because this, whoever this is, they're nobody right now, but they're going to be something. It was Walter Goggins.
Yeah, of course.
Walter Goggins. And look what he turned out to be. Another time it happened was when I was watching Catch Me If You Can. And this young kind of easily manipulated nurse character that he manipulates, that Leonardo DiCaprio manipulates. And again, it's not because Hollywood is naturally very progressive and naturally you don't want to play the dumb woman who's easily seduced and taken advantage of, because it's a kind of an ugly thing, you know, like we've come a long way. Yeah. And so to play a woman who is just kind of easily manipulated and kind of dumb, but also to play her authentic, like sympathetically, where you love this person who is like the contrary of the feminist ideal. And I remember watching this young woman playing this role and playing it so well and just kind of falling in love with her and just going, this is such a bold choice for this actress. And it was Amy Adams.
Yes.
And it was Amy Adams before she was Amy Adams, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
The first thing, and I remember like going through the credits. I was like, who is this actress? So anyway, all that to say, Courage Under Fire is my number two
Oh,
movie.
cool.
Because that was the first time I ever saw Matt Damon, and it was one of those moments where I saw him playing this hyper skinny, kind of not drugged out, but kind of self-medicated PTSD war vet. And I remember just thinking to myself, who is this guy? He was so good. And I had to look him up. I was like, I don't know who that actor was, but I gotta find out who that was. And that's apparently the same movie that Spielberg saw that made him cast him in Saving Private Ryan. And he chose Matt Damon because of his anonymity. That's why he chose him. He loved the idea of having this super talented young actor that nobody knew who was going to knock it out of the park. And then, of course, Good Will Hunting happens, and suddenly his anonymous title character is now anything but anonymous. And so I think my understanding of the story is that Spielberg was quite disappointed. I mean, happy for his success, but disappointed that he had intentionally chosen this anonymous person, because you don't want to have big stars, you know, like a movie is so much more believable when you're not conscious of the people playing the roles, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like Matt Damon became, because of that sudden fame, in a completely different way, like Marlon Brando at the end of Apocalypse Now. We keep waiting for this character to show up, and then in the end we see, but that's not what Spielberg wanted from it.
No,
I'm
he wanted a
sure.
really authentic, really truthful, vulnerable character that nobody would know, but everyone would buy into. I just his work in Courage Under Fire is so good, and he starved himself for that role. Like, he
Yeah.
starved himself to the point where I didn't know which flashback character he was for a large part of the movie, because his when he's revisited later and he's lost all that weight from his PTSD, I didn't recognize him. I was like, I don't know which flashback character this is, because he looks so completely different from any of them. And so I sort of had to do my little research and figure out just from the names. It was like, but yeah, I remember watching that movie and just going, I don't know who this actor is, but he is gold. And if anybody in Hollywood has any brains at all, he's going to be the next big thing. And
She
that doesn't
was.
happen to me very often,
Yeah.
but that's happened 3 or 4 times in my life, and that was
Three
one of them.
examples right there. And yeah, I have the same thing when I spot somebody and then, or it's a performance early in the year. I mean, Amy Madigan just, won her Oscar for Weapons. And when I saw Weapons in theaters, I thought, well, this is a horror movie. It's a stretch, but I really hope people recognize how great this is because I didn't recognize her for the first several scenes. And everybody, like 2 weeks later, was talking about this and that, oh, she needs to go to the Oscars. I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I have good
You know,
taste.
the same thing happened with me with Robin Wright in The Pledge. Do you remember that Jack Nicholson
Yeah,
movie,
I
The
love
Pledge?
that movie. Yes.
Yeah, me too. And
Sean
that happened to me. I
Connery.
remember I was about halfway through the movie before I realized who the trailer park crackhead was.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my gosh, that's Princess Buttercup.
Yeah.
I was like, what? You
Janie
know?
from Forrest Gump. Yes.
She's the only actress who's done that to me twice.
Oh, really? Twice.
The only actress who's done that to me twice, where I didn't recognize who she was until either partway through or near the end of the movie. The other one was she was in that mountain climbing movie with Jake Gyllenhaal. I don't remember what it's called, but it's a movie with like Josh Brolin's in it, Jake Gyllenhaal's in it. It's a movie about climbing some crazy mountain. They get trapped up there. She plays the wife of one of the mountaineers. And she's on the receiving end of these phone calls, and she is like this Texas woman with a bob haircut,
Yeah.
and she's kind of out of shape, and her posture's weird, and her accent's thick, and I didn't know who it was. And I'm at the end of the movie, I was like, "Who's that actress? She's really good." And I had to look it up in the credits. I was like, "That was Robin Wright." So she's done it to me twice, once in The Pledge and once in that movie, in that mountain climbing movie, where I'm like, because she has those leading lady looks, people sleep on how talented she is. But she is
Yeah, they do.
unbelievable. Well, they don't need more because of House of Cards.
Well,
She got her flowers with House of Cards, but
but she never got the big prizes though. I mean, she won
that's
a
true.
single Golden Globe, which is kind of like a around the time with all the Kevin Spacey stuff that happened. It was like, we're so sorry you've had to deal with this. Here's an award. But she didn't win the Emmy for, I mean, yeah, she, I still think she's an underrated actor. Like
Yeah, I agree.
she's terrific. And I feel like someday somebody's gonna, they've given her these, and I just don't know why they haven't completely
Anyway,
responded.
we're so far off topic,
Anyway,
but
we are really off topic there, but yeah, getting back to
really
Courage and
great
Joy,
actor.
I watched it in theaters a long time ago. I'd like to watch it again, but I do remember afterwards, after the fact, it's like, okay, Matt Damon was undiscovered and gave this great role. And then after that was his celebrity came to be. When you would see the DVDs or Blu-rays of Courage Under Fire, all of a sudden you see Matt Damon's name on the list of
On
the
the
top 30.
marquee, the top, and he's in it. He's not, definitely not the main character at all.
But it's like, oh, we're gonna sell some more DVDs because Matt Damon fans are going to want it there. So really cool choice. And again, this it's kind of in a way like parallel to my Chasing Amy
Yeah,
in there with
exactly.
Ben Affleck, is like, okay, this is when you first notice somebody who is going to be great, then you like to celebrate
His
that.
performance is unbelievable. People should watch that movie just for Matt Damon's performance. It might be one of the best performances of his career.
And he's been good for so long there. So I think then we are on to my number two. My number two. We'll start off with Ben Affleck with my number two choice, which is, and this was the second movie that he had directed. And there was one before that, which I was a little bit mixed on, but I could recognize the talent here. But The Town, I really love The Town. It's a terrific, it's not, but it's in the conversation. It's not as great as Heat, but it's that type of a thing with a great ensemble cast. Set in like again the neighborhoods that he knows in Boston, and that neighborhood in Boston, and these guys are just master bank robbers. But there's of course like the typical kind of crime plot there. But everybody was good in that movie. Jeremy Renner, that kind of was between that and Hurt Locker, made him a bit of a textbook name too. He got the Oscar nominations 2 years in a row because of that. But you could have nominated anybody. Blake Lively, who has a lot of heat around her these days, but Blake Lively was at that point to me only known as like this gossip girl or this whatever. But then I saw like, oh, she can act too. Like he got some great performances out of everybody. Jon Hamm was in that. I mean, if people haven't checked out The Town,
Only
and I
choice.
think there's it's broadly appealing because it's not it's it's taking itself. Not taking itself too as seriously as like Argo or something. It's not a political movie. It's just a really solid crime thriller, beautifully directed. But I remember it was on my top 10 list that year. I thought, wow, like, okay, this was kind of again a step towards people recognizing, yeah, Ben Affleck is not a punchline anymore. He is a serious filmmaker, and
He's good at what he does.
so
Great choice. Great choice.
I wish I could watch The Town more often. I haven't watched it as much as I would like, but it's one I just it's such a great feeling with that one. And when I
Good choice.
him, I think of that film so much. So yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't got much to add. Great choice. Great genre film. Well directed. Again, yeah, just like you said, put him in the conversation where he belongs, I think.
Yeah. It was a good step forward, and it did get enough critical attention. Not fully, I think it was got that one Oscar nomination for Jeremy Renner, but who had an interesting arc in the film there. But they were all really good. And my number two for Matt Damon is a film where he's a supporting character, but very impactful. I love this movie. It was the Coen brothers' True Grit.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, he plays LaBeouf, who is this Texas Ranger who travels along with Matty Ross and then Rooster Cogburn on this mission of revenge.
Is Barry Pepper the bad guy in that movie?
Barry Pepper's one of the bad guys, and
Yeah.
Josh Brolin is the other one.
Man,
Everybody
I saw that
knows
movie ages ago. Yeah,
Josh
yeah,
Brolin was kind of like supposed to be the big bad in it, but actually he was a bit of a like two-dimensional. The real baddie in that one was Barry Pepper. And
Yeah.
again, I don't know, like Jeff Bridges is fantastic, but Hailee Steinfeld, and I was glad that she was in Sinners because I was just like, who is this young person? Like, she deserves all the awards. I
Yeah.
still wish she had won the
Yeah.
Oscar for that role. And I feel like now she's hopefully gonna be like the Cooglers and the Paul Thomas Andersons of the world will start to cast her in more stuff.
Yeah.
She has a stint
Yeah.
as a pop star, which I find like some people do that and you can make some money at that. But she's a very talented actor,
Yeah.
and really is it handled Coen brother dialogue is not easy to handle. As a young person, she came in there and just mastered it and kind of controlled the energy of that film with some heavy hitters.
That's boy, that's a great choice.
Matt Damon is such a, again, against type, this fun, kind of goofy, colorful character, socially awkward.
Man, I'm struggling to remember. I mean, I haven't seen it for a long time. I have seen it. I'm struggling to remember him in the movie. I got to watch it again.
Like he seems like the weak link among the three, but then when we kind of get towards the end of the film, we realize like, no, he's got some skills too. And it's yeah, it's a really
I
cool
have
role
to
for
watch
him.
that again. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another, speaking of Barry Pepper, that's another movie where I had to sort of, about halfway through the movie, I was like, I think I know that actor, and it was Barry Pepper, but I didn't recognize him right off the bat. Now, he was heavily made up. I mean, he had
Yes.
some major prosthetics or beard work and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, great movie. I wouldn't have occurred to me. I completely forgot he was in that.
Now, it's one of my favorites. One of my favorite Coen brother films.
Yeah, it's a
Up
solid
there,
movie.
with No Country
I need to watch it
and
again.
Eagle.
I need to find it and watch it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's the fun thing about doing this too. I mean,
Yeah.
I have a Ben Affleck movie I absolutely need to see from your list here, and so just kind of
Is that
some
Changing
of
Lanes? Or which? No, Way Back.
the way back, just because I
Way Back.
haven't.
Oh, you have
Yeah,
to. Yeah, you have
yeah.
to. Yeah.
Well, Changing Lanes I have seen, and I'm in total agreement. But I obviously need to see The Way Back because
Yeah.
I remember
Yeah.
hearing all
Highly
the.
recommend. Highly recommend.
Yeah, I remember hearing all those good notices that he had at that time there. So we're to number one for your list for Ben Affleck.
Well, so this is like the most conventional, most obvious, least surprising, least Dubray-esque choice imaginable. But my number one movie for both guys is Good Will Hunting. Just because I love, man, when that movie came out, it blew my mind. I loved it. I loved Robin Williams in it. I performed scenes from it for different functions and showcases and things. I just love that movie. And you made a good point earlier when we were talking about
Okay, looks like I got you back in there.
here. I'm back. Okay,
Okay.
good.
Yeah. Sorry, we lost you just before the start of the point you were making there.
Well, okay, where did I live? I didn't realize I was cut off until like halfway through.
You had said something about that I had made a good point when talking about Good Will
Oh
Hunting.
yeah, you made a good point about Matt. You can see the writers, you can see a little bit of their immaturity as writers when you look back on it in hindsight, because like the points that Matt Damon makes to Robin Williams' character to demonstrate his unconventional depth of knowledge on certain points, like I think he's talking about a people's history, and he's talking about different historical books, and they're unconventional choices that kind of, now that I'm a little older, are conventional in certain circles. And so if you're tapped into those circles politically, you can kind of spout those titles as like a almost like a cheat to having secret knowledge, you know? And so now that I've been around a little longer and I'm a little more familiar with those circles and that way of thinking, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's not, you know, it's, they're he's not as knowledgeable as he's making himself out to be. But even still, having said that, the quality of the writing, like the character development, like brilliantly developed characters.
Yes.
Like you think of Skarsgård and Williams, you think of their two characters and how different they are and how well acted they are. Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, how different their characters are and how well acted they are. Everybody's good. There's not a weak note. The writing is good. The way it was filmed was brilliant. The performances were great. I think Robin Williams deserved his Oscar. It's one of my favorite performances of his. I still think he should have won for Awakenings, because that's my
He's very
favorite.
good in Awakenings. Yeah,
That's
that's my favorite.
my favorite Robin Williams movie of all time. But he was good in this, and I was happy he won the Oscar. Maybe for sentimental reasons too. I grew up on Mork and Mindy. I don't know, but that's probably the most obvious conventional choice on this list. But I'm putting it number one for both of them.
Well, sometimes obvious is the right choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I am so curious.
it's
I am so
funny
curious.
how we did this though, because we both had the same kind of placement for Good Will Hunting for both of them. So it's almost like a bit, yeah, you can't have Good Will Hunting without Ben or without Matt. Like they're a
Yeah.
package deal with that.
Yeah. I think my favorite scene in the movie is when Ben Affleck impersonates Matt Damon's character in the business meeting, when they're at like the investment meeting.
That's
And
very funny.
oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. It's so good.
And I think that's where like Affleck is very funny, and people forget that sometimes. Like he actually seemed a little bit like he could play the comedic beats in there really well. And
And
not to
that's not
disagree
easy. That's not easy. There's a lot of actors that will tell you, being angry on film will get you an Academy Award, but it's relatively easy to do. Being funny, genuinely funny on film, very difficult to do.
it's
Very
much harder. Comedy's always been harder, but also comedy or comedic relief in a serious film like that too. And there's actually a lot of those notes, but yet it
Okay,
was mostly.
I'm having a brain fart moment. Shawshank Redemption. What's the guy's name? The actor's name? He
So
Wardlow.
Morgan Freeman or Tim Robbins?
Tim Robbins. Yeah. So Tim Robbins. I remember watching an interview with him where he said to be genuinely funny on screen is the single hardest thing to do. Single hardest thing to do. And yeah, he had a nice range in that movie. I thought Ben Affleck had a nice range in that movie. Got to play a lot of different notes. Even though the type of character he played did not lend itself well to career development, to the really astute viewer, it should have, in my opinion.
Well, my number one for Ben Affleck seems like an obvious choice and has already been mentioned, but it is Argo.
Oh, okay, good.
Me, yeah, just a high water mark of his career. But I really like him as a director. He's done some other stuff there. I'm hoping that he kind of gets the screenplays and material, or he himself writes some material to kind of get back to like the Argo. Gone Baby Gone was his directorial debut, which got a ton of attention. People really do like that one.
That was good. Good
There was
movie.
some screenplay which was maybe based on stuff from the novel that I was critical of with that one. I'd like to go back to that one someday, but it showed, especially in the first half, his talent as a director. But then The Town was a leap up for me, and then Argo was, just that next level. To be able to tell such a big story, which it was a true story, and in most people's lifetimes who were of the age watching that film, it felt like very recent history for them, and they were there and they kind of saw how that, and that's where some of the haters later on were nitpicking, and I know some Canadians were not happy. They thought they would be disrespected by that movie. I know a lot of history teachers and historians and people that I've worked with had issues with what he did there, but he had it was Victor Garber, I think, played the Canadian in there, and they had an actual Canadian playing that role too. There was a lot of balls in the air to balance that production, and I think and of course he was acting it as a central character. I thought his performance was very good too in it as well. But Alan Arkin as that Hollywood producer,
Oh my gosh, I forgot about Alan Arkin.
what a
He
great,
was unbelievable.
yeah.
You've brought up a really good point, and I'd like to give just a little bit more time to it if we could. People don't understand how difficult it is to act in a movie that you're directing. People have no idea. There's a lot of great actors who tried that and failed. And I'll give you some examples. Ed Harris in Appaloosa. He did not have, was it Appaloosa? Wait a minute. The one he did with
He was very good in Pollock. I thought he directed
was
Pollock.
good
That
in
was
Pollock. Yeah, he was good in Pollock.
there's another example. Yeah, it might have been Appaloosa.
The movie he made with Aragorn, the Western, I think it was Appaloosa. Anyway, he was good in it, but he wasn't great in it because he was distracted. Denzel Washington with Fences, same thing. He's a great actor, one of the historic best actors, Denzel Washington. But in Fences, he was too distracted. He was not very good.
I don't
And
know. I liked his acting performance. His directing was pretty simple to the play, but I might
I
argue
think
it's his acting that's
he
better.
cast Viola Davis, who is one of the great all-time actresses, and that might have been a mistake because he was kind of digging into his bag of tricks, and she was living it. And
Yeah.
that's you cannot use tricks when you're acting with somebody who is so authentically, intimately involved in her character.
They
Anyway,
did a show on Broadway together. They
did they?
they'd won Tony Awards for it.
I would love to see the Broadway version because anyway, all I'm saying is there's a lot of really good actors who've tried to act in movies that they're directing, and it doesn't go, in my opinion, it doesn't go well for them because they're just, you can't be at your best when you have to concentrate on 15 different things. But so for him to be that good in a movie where he's, like you said, where he's got all those different balls in the air, that's a real achievement. That's a real achievement. And I don't think people realize how hard that is because acting, you have to act well. You have to be 100% in the moment. And how do you be 100% in the moment when you're worried about the lighting and when you're worried about people hitting their marks and when you're worried about whether the camera's in focus and when you're worried about, I mean, and whether Crafty's going to be there in 2 hours and, like when you've got all that stuff in your head, how can you? It's very difficult. And I've actually tried to do it, kind of, and it's very, very hard. And so when somebody has an accomplishment like that, it's just 10 times more impressive.
Yeah, it was very impressive. It was Eastwood-esque, if you will, because I think Eastwood really figured out a way to do that.
Yes, you're right. Eastwood's the king of
Million Dollar Baby and of course Unforgiven and
Unforgiven,
many other
yeah.
examples. But it's yeah, the times where you don't act in it and you can focus on directing is sometimes nice for guys like that. But yeah, anyway, I think he's a great director. I think he has potential to be a great actor. We see it sometimes. You're right. I think the roles he's offered can be a little bit more emotionally limited. And so I'm glad that he has some other movies in kind of his canon there. But yeah, Argo for me.
Great choice.
For Matt Damon, it's my number one is a movie that has not been mentioned yet. And I think he was very good to the point where almost everybody in the film probably deserved an Oscar nomination. He certainly did. It's The Departed, directed by Martin Scorsese.
Yeah,
It's
I thought about that one.
one of my favorite films of the century. And you know, if you haven't seen The Departed, you absolutely have to see it. But you're putting like the two teen celebrities with big movie releases in 1997 in the same movie, DiCaprio with Titanic, Matt Damon with Good Will Hunting, and they have these foil characters which are so clever in a way where we have DiCaprio, who is this cop who looks like he's been fired and isn't a cop anymore, so he can get in with this criminal world to be able to rat on them. And then we have Matt Damon, who looks like an upstanding police officer who really is in the pocket of the mob, you know, led by Jack Nicholson, who's got his whole other story going on there, and Mark Wahlberg's after them. And just the dynamic of everything in there, multi-layered story based on a Japanese crime film in Infernal Affairs.
I did not know that.
Yeah,
I did
if
not
you
know
see,
that.
I mean, beat by beat, it's a similar type of thing, but seeing the
Wow,
American
okay.
version first, it had so many shocking moments. And again, talk about a tough film to balance as a director. But Matt Damon's character, he's given so much to do because he gets to be the villain. And in many ways, in Talented Mr. Ripley, he was a villain as well. But we were seeing the story through his point of view. Like we get to a point we just, again, if you're going along with it, you just despise Matt Damon, one of the most likable guys in Hollywood. You despise him in that film because he is so effective. I mean, the writing and all the tools there, and he's acting off of Nicholson and DiCaprio and so many legends and being directed by a legend. But
and a good script too. Like there's some twists. There's some twists in that script that you cannot see coming.
Yeah, and I, if you're a fan of The Departed, check out the. It was actually a trilogy, the original films there. But I know people always want to throw shade at movies, and that was kind of thrown at me because they knew I was a big fan of this. And yeah, but they basically took the story beats from the, you know, from the original that wasn't part of the Hollywood system, and like. Sure, but I can enjoy both of them. It's a world where I can, you know, love them all. Yeah. But yeah, I Matt Damon really surprised me. I mean, if he could surprise me, because I knew that he's a great actor, but he really surprised me in that movie. He didn't get a lot of attention for his acting in that one, just because there were so many.
There was a lot to look at.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff in there. And I don't think he does anything that loses. Like there's that scene where he meets Nicholson in this porn theater, this really uncomfortable, but it was the only place where they could talk and be plot out their bad guy stuff because.
I remember that.
Okay.
I remember the scene where they're in the office. Oh, that's DiCaprio. It's DiCaprio. Where he's got his hand in the bag because he's like talking. He's just got this decapitated hand in a bag while they're, and he's just managing the business like it's nothing. Yeah. And DiCaprio's like, what the heck?
Like he's in I am in so much danger with what I'm trying to do there. I think that's like DiCaprio's best performance too. So I mean, I'm an enormous fan there. But yeah, I think it's the best movie he's been a part of there, and it's one of my favorites there. So,
wow,
really good lists here that we have. So I'm gonna go over the points here. It's gonna be interesting to somehow create this and put this into like a top five.
I mean, Argo is my second, and you're first.
Argo's number one, absolutely no question.
Number nine points, right?
Yeah, 9 points, followed by Good Will Hunting, 6 points. The Town is third place with 3 points. Again, that was on me. Then there was a tie for fourth and fifth. That would be the cutoff there with Chasing Amy and your choice, The Way Back.
Oh, interesting.
Kind of way, very spread out with the Ben Affleck one, which was interesting. It's less overlap. The Matt Damon one, points-wise, everything's a lot closer. This is kind of interesting too. So it will end up being 6 movies because of a tie, but a tie for first, Good Will Hunting and Saving Private Ryan both have 6 points.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yep.
Then third place is Departed with the 5 points I gave the Departed. Then fourth place is True Grit with the, a three-way tie for fourth place, which will be the fourth, fifth, and sixth positions with True Grit. One I put 4 points for. Mm-hmm. Courage Under Fire, which you gave 4 points to. And The Talented Mr. Ripley, which you gave 2 points to. So we collaborated on that one.
Nice.
Top six there. So, and I won't force us to break that tie there necessarily. But, anyway, this is all the kind of the highlights. And I think it's a lot of highlights. And it'll be interesting in a few years to kind of see what else we get from these guys, and I'm excited to watch more films from them. Here's the shedding part, I guess, if you will. If you're looking over their filmographies, I'll let you go first on this one. A movie that you feel that did not benefit or probably shouldn't be in the filmography of Ben Affleck and then Matt Damon.
So in terms of the list that I have.
Just something, a movie that you just wish was not part of their film.
It doesn't have to be from my list.
It doesn't have to be from your list. No, it's just a movie that you don't like that they did. Yeah.
Okay, hold on. I'm gonna pull up his filmography because I thought I had to shed one out of my list.
No.
Let me just I don't want to waste your time here, but let me just pull up. That changes everything. Ooh, boy, there's a lot here. There's a couple. I think a safe choice would be Pearl Harbor. We could get rid of Pearl Harbor without it hurting the world at all. I actually did not like Dogma. I'm a little bit different that way, but it would be a movie that if it disappeared, it wouldn't kill me. I'm going to say... I'm gonna go Pearl Harbor.
Pearl Harbor, yeah.
I never actually saw Gigli. It would Gigli is the obvious choice, but I never saw it, so I can't say if it's.
I saw Gigli, and I don't, again, I think there's a lot of negativity towards it. I don't think it's completely warranted. It'd be
Oh,
interesting
really?
to watch it. It's not a good movie by any stretch of the imagination. I don't want to oversell it, but it's not
Yeah.
that as bad as it was made out to be. But yeah, Pearl Harbor, I remember just, oh, I was just like the entire, yeah, Pearl Harbor was just about this romance between Kate Beckinsale and Ben Affleck. That's what I got. And again, that's just everything about it. Could go on a rant about that one. Very, very, very good choice for a bad movie. I'm actually going to go with a movie. Maybe it's beating up on something that's been a little bit forgotten about, but wow, was it bad? Reindeer Games. Have you ever seen Reindeer Games?
I think I have, but it's been so long. It's
Yeah.
been so
Okay.
long. I don't remember it at all.
Well, like essentially, he gets out of prison. He's played a guy named Rudy Duncan, and he assumes the identity of a recently deceased cellmate to meet a woman he'd been corresponding with, played by Charlize Theron. When he arrives home, he's drawn into a dangerous scheme led by her violent brother, Gabriel, played by Gary Sinise. Sounded like a really good, solid crime thriller plot, and everything about it is wrongheaded, badly written, badly acted. The talented cast look uncomfortable, and I cannot describe the last 5 to 10 minutes of this movie and the plot twist that happens with this film that's set at Christmas, where I couldn't look at the screen. I was so embarrassed with how bad this movie had gone and what the payoff was for Ben Affleck's character. So that's all I'll say about it. Maybe I'm making some more intriguing than anything else, but Reindeer Games has always been such a not as well publicized a black mark on his filmography, but I just for all of them, for Sinise and for Charlize Theron, like they could these are talented people that could have been working on other projects. I hope they were paid right. And John Frankenheimer, oh, may he rest in peace. What a great director. He was the director of it too. Well past his best before date, obviously. So I just thought all the pieces were in there for it to be a really great film. And it was bad. Very, very bad. Yeah. For Matt Damon, what would be your movie to shed?
There's not a lot here. I mean, Behind the Candelabra, not a favorite for me. There's just so many good ones. So many good ones here. Elysium, I wasn't a huge fan of that one, to be honest. Trying to find it. I'm trying to see if there's one that really stands out as like a turkey, but I don't see any turkeys
It's
here.
pretty steady, yeah.
I'm just gonna say Elysium. I didn't really like it too much.
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've seen it. I don't even remember why I didn't like it. I just remember I didn't really like it.
Yeah, I mean, it was part of like the District 9 filmmaker Neil Blomkamp, right? And I think it was the promise of like what his follow-up, but he has a major movie stars in this one. But I'm not sure if I even saw that one. This is a tougher task because he has, as I said, he gets the best scripts, and he I think he does might be a little bit choosier than the Fleck. He has less alimony payments that he
And he's a little less, like you said it great right off the top of the podcast. Ben Affleck has big hits and big misses.
Yeah. So it's
Matthew
easier
becomes just a little bit more
Oh,
steady.
for the list there, but I'm going with one. Maybe it's unfair because it's kind of an extended cameo, very strange sequence. But yeah, I mentioned the relationship with Kevin Smith has its good things and it's not so good. Matt Damon, by the way, has a bit of a cameo scene in Chasing Amy at one point too. So back before anybody knew who he was as well. But that these guys they're friends, so they came back and they were in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Whereas
Yeah.
my thoughts on Jane, Silent Bob, I recently expressed them, is that they are better as the secondary characters, or they're in the
Yes.
scenes in Kevin Smith's movies. When they become the main characters, it's just kind of like gobbledygook. I mean, it's kind of a just a broad comedy with as many offensive jokes as you possibly can, but no.
It's like when you think you're getting a Bavarian cream donut, but it actually has marshmallow inside it.
Yeah, something like that. Yes, that's a good
You're like, you're
analogy.
ready for this rich, this wonderful, rich, creamy, well-made texture inside. You just get marshmallow, and it's just like,
Yeah,
come on.
it's empty. It's a bad fast food meal of a film.
Marshmallow is great when it's a scoop of something on top of something else that really tastes great.
So I
But
mean,
when it's
I
the
don't
main
dislike
feature.
their dynamic, but yeah, I find them very frustrating. But in this movie dares to have Jane, Silent Bob in Hollywood, and they're filming a sequel to Good Will Hunting, Good Will Hunting 2. They're just basically reenacting the How'd You Like Them Apples scene again, and it's looking really, really bad. And like Gus Van Sant's in the corner, looking like he's distracted and he's not really like paying attention to his directing at all. And then we have Matt and Ben, and they make their appearances in there. But it's just like, what a waste of Matt Damon's time is that? This is stretching it. I know he's had, I mean, the only bomb I can think of really for him was a movie I haven't seen, what was the Great Wall movie? Yeah.
I thought about that one, but
Did you see it?
I actually kind of, it's a guilty pleasure,
I'd like to
because
see
of
it
the sheer
sometime.
spectacle of it.
Yeah, I'd like to see it sometime. So I mean, I haven't seen it, so I wouldn't take it off the list. And that's kind of my thought, is it had a bad weekend at the box office and it was really expensive. That doesn't make it a bad movie necessarily.
Yeah, and
So
it actually made a lot of movie overseas, a
yeah.
lot of money overseas.
Yeah, it kind
I
of
haven't
varied
seen the
for it.
whole movie either, but I've seen so much of it on YouTube. I've seen so many different clips of it on YouTube that I'm kind of like, you know what? It's kind of a stinker, but God bless him for just jumping in and making a movie. It's funny. The funny thing about Matt Damon is more he there are. He will call in a performance sometimes. And he's so good that he can more or less call in a performance and still be great.
Yeah.
But so, for instance, The Martian, he kind of called that one in. It's a great movie. The premise is amazing. The writing is amazing. He's good in it, but he kind of called it in.
It was a
Like,
great role for him. Like,
yeah.
the character was so endearing that it kind of pushed him to win a Globe Award and to get to the
And
Oscars.
he did not, I hate to say it, he did not deserve it. In that movie, he's supposed to be like rail thin and emaciated. And they have one scene where he takes his suit off and they have to cut to a below neck shot because they had to bring a body double in because he just couldn't be bothered to lose the weight. He's just like, nah, I'm not doing it. And so the whole movie, he's walking around, obviously a healthy weight, a little bit of a paunch, even, not a lot, but obviously rounded hips, and he's got his middle-aged body, and then they go to the scene where he takes the suit off, and it's cleverly cut off at the shoulders, and it's like ribs and bone, and then he puts the suit back on and suddenly he's got a normal body again. And it's just he was kind of at a point in his career where he doesn't need the money, and he doesn't need to put himself through that. and
Yeah, there's not a
and
risk.
so
No.
But when he puts his heart and soul into a project, there's nobody better.
Yeah.
It's just he doesn't do that very often anymore.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons I'm so excited about The Odyssey is I really believe that he put his heart and soul into this movie. I
Yeah.
look at pictures of him and the work he did on his body to be right for this role, and you can tell he put some time in. And I'm very excited because it's been a while since I've seen a movie where I really felt his heart was in it.
Yeah.
And like, he was good in Oppenheimer, but I feel he kind of called it in. He was good in Ford versus Ferrari, but I think he kind of called it in. None of those movies ch required anything of him that he couldn't do without any warm up whatsoever. Odyssey requires something big of him.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to see that movie.
Yeah, I'm hoping for good things there. You know, it's being built up for sure. And I really enjoyed Oppenheimer. I thought it was a little bit overpraised, but yeah, and yeah, Matt Damon was given a character role, which he could probably do easily in that one.
He can
And
do it in his sleep.
but
He could show up 15 minutes before they start filming and bang those lines out and be reasonably good and go home. And it feels like that's kind of what he did.
And that's when if you're a really good actor who's also, that kind of movie star, you can do that, but it doesn't look like he's phoning it in.
It's an easy role for him. It's not a hard role for him. Like to show up 15 pounds overweight and say these lines with a stern voice, it's anybody. I mean, and he's done a few roles lately that are like that. I'm excited for the Odyssey because, and it's the same we were talking about. Sorry, this is getting really long. I'm sorry we're taking so much of your time, but we were talking about Munich earlier. It's the same thing with Steven Spielberg. He is maybe the best director ever, certainly a great director. When his heart is in a project, when it's something that is near and dear to his heart, there is nobody better on planet Earth. Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan, when it's something that touches his heart, nobody's better. But he will also make movies that don't touch his heart. You get War of the Worlds and things like that, and those are sort of like like they're kind of like he's got a bag of tricks that's better than anybody's, but you can tell he's dipping into it to get through it,
One for the studio, one for me, type of a
Yeah,
thing.
that's right. That's right. But when his heart is in it, there's nobody better. And Matt Damon is the same way. When his heart is in it, nobody's better. But he's just got so much money now that it's hard to find movies where his heart's really in it. You know what I mean?
Well, and I'm sure that's why he wants to work with the Christopher Nolans and like the directors who will challenge him.
I'm excited. Let's get some old Matt Damon.
He'll be good. Yeah, anyway,
Yeah.
thank you so much. It was great catching up with
Pleasure.
you here, talking some movies, talking about two of our most interesting they were once young movie stars and are now the Hollywood establishment. And
Yeah.
again, I look forward to when they have their highs. Their highs are just so good. I just
Yeah.
don't like it when there's, and again, Damon has not had many lows. It will probably happen at some point, and it'll be tough. Whereas is a Fleck who's kind of got his armor on because he's done a lot of this stuff there. But
Taking a
I'm
beating.
glad we mentioned some movies that maybe some people haven't heard of or haven't thought of for a while. That
I've never seen Chasing Amy.
you've never
So
watched.
I've never seen Chasing Amy, so I'm gonna find that movie on
You
your
may or you
recommendation.
may not like it. It's not for everyone, but
No,
it's
but
something
if you're ranking it
you'll
that high, and I love the idea of seeing him in something before he was Ben Affleck, you know what I
like.
mean?
Yeah, it just seems a bit more of a relaxed figure, again, he represented young men of that particular time, and maybe young men now are, it's a bit different, but yeah, it's I think it's just that awkward 20s where you are a man, but you're still
Barely,
haven't got
barely.
figured out. So yeah,
Yeah.
anyway, I just thanks again for being on the show. I'll we mentioned
Joy.
briefly, we mentioned him a couple times there, usually do, but check out Larry Parsons' Rank and Review podcast. Check out A Lifetime of Hallmark, Fitzpatrick, and Les Kirkendall Barrett's podcast, as well as Jason Bowers, the three of them, looking at Lifetime and Hallmark movies in comedic detail, scene by scene. And then check out Lindsay Wilkins' show, Schlock and Awe, and another one she's been working on, Oscars So Random. A lot of shout outs there, a lot of friends of the Shelf Shedding Movie Show. And again, I just think supporting independent podcasts and people like us who just do this, talk to friends and get away from some of the other things in life. That's an important thing. So I'm so happy that, it's through a spam email, but I'm so happy we were able to kind of reach.
Years in the making.
Yeah. And we'll have to have you on sooner than I don't know what it was, like 3 4 years ago. It was the time. Yeah.
Well, this is a joy, man. I would love to do it again. It'd be fun. Thank
Yeah.
you.
Perfect. And best of luck. I know you're traveling around. Anything you'd like to kind of shout out about your acting work, film work, that kind of thing? People.
Well, I'm now the associate director of a company called The Thorn, Thorn Productions. And so our signature show is just called The Thorn. People can check it out, www.thethorn.com. We're 3.5 years into a national tour. We've done about 250 shows. We're now in Florida, and we had our first Canadian date last fall. We got to do shows at Meridian Hall in Toronto. That was our first foray into Canada. I've been trying to get it to TCU for about a year and a half. I've been talking to the producers about coming to TCU and doing a Western Canadian tour. It might happen. They're talking about maybe Calgary next spring, but yeah, that's what I'm doing now, and I love it. I love it to death. Hoping, trying to come back. I've been actually talking to some Saskatoon directors about hoping to come home and just do a show somewhere because it's been so long. I haven't been home for so long. And now Sky Brandon, now Shakespeare on the Saskatchewan AD. That blew my mind. I was so happy. Jaron Francis is directing at Station Arts Center. I'm like, now all I want to do is come home and work because those are like my favorite dudes ever.
These are
So,
great
like,
people to work with.
I'm just like, oh, now all I want to do is be in Saskatoon for the summer to work for one of those guys. But we'll see
Scott
what happens.
has been
Hopefully.
kind enough to come on a few times here. We did a Christopher Nolan show.
Oh,
It's
yeah,
now
I'm looking
more than
forward
a year ago, and yeah, so it's just yeah, it's a good, definitely a good place to be. I mean,
to that. Oh, it's a good
even
time for Saskatoon, man. With if those guys are on the ascension, that bodes well.
the weather's still the weather here, but
Yeah, that's why I want to come home and work in the summer.
yeah, that yes, that's the right time. That's absolutely the right idea there.
Anyway, thanks for having me, pal. It's been really nice catching up, and all the best to you.
Yeah, thanks so much. And just before we go, just as I say to at the end of every show, to people listening, just be kind to one another, be safe, and keep supporting the movies and check out the films of these obscure Ben Affleck and Matt Damon characters. I think they have a future in film.
I think great things ahead for those young guys.
I have high hopes for them. So, yeah, until next time, goodbye.